This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to a special edition iFanboy podcast on Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace in 3D. Podcast on Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace in 3D. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Well, this is a very unlikely podcast.
And Josh Flanagan.
How did I let this happen?
Why are we doing this?
Normally we talk about comic book movies or movies related to superheroes or comic books or whatever's happening in the world of comics, but there are lots of Star Wars comics. Also, we're in charge. We decided to do the show because... It's our decision.
No, I think Star Wars is in. If Transformers is in the realm, Star Wars is in the realm.
Yeah. I don't want to justify it.
Okay,
there have been Star Wars comics for 30 years.
Yes,
so
longer than we've been alive. No,
We just wanted to exercise the Star Wars demons. Decided we'd get it one last shot in, and then there you go. What's funny is I realized as going to this theater, I hadn't seen the movie in probably 8 years.
No, I had the same thought as I was sitting there as the Lucasfilm logo went through. I probably haven't seen this movie in one sitting all the way through since 99 in the theater.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I got the DVD, also. But I went and I watched the pod race and that was it.
I probably watched it once on DVD when it came out.
And I got the Blu-rays. I've never touched the first three.
Oh, I didn't even order those Blu-rays. I got this. Anyway, so we are of the age, and this is also normally these shows have some sort of vague format where we talk about the pluses and minuses of the movie, what we thought of it. I feel like this one's going to be a little bit rambling because I feel like this is almost a therapy session more than podcast. Well,
you'd have to have pluses.
Yeah, sure.
There's a couple of pluses in the movie.
But we don't need to recap or rehash the plot or the anything like everyone knows what this is. So I think this is more about
I disagree with that.
Our feelings about Star Wars and then the kind of comments and it's probably, and Connor, I think you're about to say this, but it probably is important to note that all three of us were born in 1977. We are probably as closest to the generation of Star Wars as it comes.
Ron, you were born like your birthday's really close to the release date.
Oh no, I was born two weeks before the movie came out, and it was technically the first movie I ever saw because my parents couldn't get a sitter, and so they just brought me.
Oh Jesus, they're those people
in the theater in 1977.
Little baby with sideburns.
And apparently, according to my mother, I didn't sleep, but I didn't make a noise. I just sat there staring up, and apparently, it had some sort of imprint because now Star Wars, at least up until 1999, was the closest thing to religion I had in my life.
When you became Opus Dei.
I was in the room for it. So I didn't see it. The first movie they did take me to though was Empire Strikes Back. So
I distinctly remember my Star Wars memory. I distinctly remember being in Italy in 1980 visiting family, and I remember the Trilogia de Guerri, the Star Wars whatever trilogy, and the shot of Han holding Leia, that painted poster. I remember seeing that in Italy in 80, and then I remember in 1983 waiting in line for Jedi at the RKO Theater on Jericho Turnpike on Long Island in Comac. And we waited for like 4 hours, and my dad went to the diner across the street to get us hamburgers while we waited in line. So those are my Star Wars original trilogy memories. So
yeah, and then Josh, you have any specific ones?
Empire is the first movie I remember seeing, and I totally remember going to see Jedi also.
Yeah,
I remember seeing Jedi in Midtown Manhattan, and afterwards going to Toy Biz, which was a giant toy store, and buying Star Wars figures because
Don't get me started on the Star Wars figures.
Yeah. So then we were all seniors in
seriously
college in 1999
Back it up. Okay. We were in college in 1997 when the re-releases came out. And that was the first taste of George Lucas's tinkering with the original trilogy.
Okay,
and
let's call him by his proper name.
The Neck.
Exactly.
And Connor and Josh, I don't believe you guys weren't there, but Gordon the intern and I went to Star Wars at midnight, and we showed up at the movie theater at the Pyramid Mall in Ithaca, and we showed up for the midnight showing at 5 o'clock. And now, just so everyone understands, this is Ithaca, New York, upstate New York. There was no line. There was no reason. But we showed up at 5 o'clock, and we were like, "We're here for the midnight showing." And the people that worked at the theater looked at us like we're crazy, and like, "Well, I guess you can stand over there." And then we proceeded to berate everyone who went to any other movie for the rest of the evening, screaming, "We're first in line! First in line!"
Ron and Gordon were annoying in college.
Well, it wasn't just us. I mean, Ziga was there and other people were there. Yeah.
That turns down the
I wasn't there.
This is not for other people. This has nothing to do with it.
Exactly.
I was there because I went down to New York City to see the movies.
Yeah.
I took the bus down and I went to the Ziegfeld for the
movie.
Oh,
you did it real, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But we were there in college for 97, and then 99 comes around, and they're going to release the prequels, and we were all seniors in college.
So now, do you remember the excitement? Like, I remember, because also this is like early internet, so we had the internet. And do you remember that first image of the shuttle on Coruscant?
Yes.
I remember that when that hit the Ain't It Cool News, and it was like, oh my God, it's the first image for episode one. Oh my, like, I totally remembered that
I remember being in Los Angeles for school when the trailer hit and going to see Adam Sandler's The Waterboy at 10 a.m.
Oh God.
Just to see the trailer. Yeah. And
I saw the, what was the Will Smith, Jason Lee, Enemy of the State.
Oh geez.
No. Yeah, it was a bad movie.
Yeah. I remember that one. Yeah, yeah. So the build up to this was palpable. Do you remember 2 weeks before the movie opened in May, when the toys launched at Toys R Us at midnight.
I did that.
Yeah, so did I. I went to Toys R Us at midnight.
First of all, one thing that became astonishingly clear to me last night was, wow, there was really no point at keeping Battle Droid with Stapp in the package. That was the first toy released,
yep.
And I got one of every thing.
As did I. It was a feeding frenzy at the Toys R Us. Actually, ironically, the Toys R Us on Jericho Turnpike that was next to the RKO Theater that I saw Return of the Jedi at, but the theater is long gone. But it was a feeding frenzy at Long Island. There was like at least 50 fat dudes and everyone grabbing for figures. And I was like, I got a Riccoli. I don't
That's
know who that
scent.
Is.
That's he's the horrible. Whole city.
Yeah.
But Josh and I were still in Ithaca because we drove down for the premiere.
Yeah.
Together with a couple of our friends.
Well,
we stopped to get toys. We stopped and got
lightsabers.
Yeah. We got some figures, and we had a lightsaber battle in the parking lot. And then we had one in the park near my house in Queens. And
well, back up even before the premiere was, and I remember this on the way to the theater today, and I tweeted it out. This was the first movie I ever bought tickets online in advance for.
I bought them on the phone.
Yeah, I remember that. Remember, we were all in contact, and I remember everyone was dialing movie phone, right? And I was like, I'm gonna go to the movie phone website, and I got in through that way, and I bought my tickets, and I saw it. What theater did I see it? I think
we call that San Diego hotel training.
Yeah, exactly. I think I saw it at the Syosset, the theater, the United Artists Theater in Syosset, which is now gone on Long Island. It's not there because we had just graduated college and you guys were still in Ithaca. You went to New York. I was back on Long Island because I was getting ready to move to Connecticut.
Can I just point out the crushing metaphor of this?
What?
It's just, what's the first thing we all did when we got out of college? We rushed to see this giant media event that turned out to be this gigantic bubble that burst. And I'm just saying, when you look at that in the larger scope of the fact that we all went to work in media, I think that speaks for itself.
Well, Josh and I saw it together at the Ziegfeld with my family and a couple other friends we had. We saw it all. We were in line. It was the big theater in Manhattan where the premieres are. So the news was there.
That's where Connor, you and I saw episode 2 and episode 3.
Yes, yeah, CNN was there interviewing people. There was people in costume. Yeah. It was a big affair, and so then the movie happened. And now we are.
So then the movie happened.
12 years later, how was your experience at the movie theater this time
today?
Yeah.
Well, you know, this is, and you know, I do want to get on with it, but it's important to note that the first time that I saw the movie, because of the experience there, I didn't realize that it was a gigantic flaming piece of shit.
Yeah.
I mean, and I have never had the visceral reaction that a lot of people did. Right away, this doesn't ruin the other movies for me in the least.
Yeah,
we'll get to that later. That's
yeah. No, and that's fine. But I saw it 10 times that summer.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, it got to be like, hey, I've seen it 6. I might as well go for 10. And I had nothing to do, so that's all that I kept doing. And by the end of that time, it was a very funny movie.
Well, the thing is, I remember seeing with you at least 3 or 4 times up in Ithaca because we went back to Ithaca for the summer. We had nothing to do. And it'd be like, right. What are we doing? Oh, we'll go see Star Wars. And we'd go see Star Wars.
Go see Star Wars. I mean, that's a fair assessment. Yeah.
But so it's funny on retrospect because we talked about it in the beginning. I haven't seen it in 8 or 9 years, so some of it I'd forgotten. The thing I took away from this time, and I literally just saw this movie, came out of it an hour ago.
Yeah, likewise. I came out of it 2 hours ago, so yeah.
It was really boring.
Really? It's well, that's the whole thing. It's like the movie started, and immediately I was like, oh, right. This is about trade negotiations.
Well, it's funny because the first movie opens up and the scroll tells you about a civil war, an oppressive regime, and a band of rebels, and there's a big fight. Yeah. This one opens up about taxes and trade routes and
embargoes and boycotts.
You're just like, sense.
You're just like, really? This is where we're going with this? We're going with taxation? Being
that was
big...
really the first sign that there were problems with the entire endeavor is that the whole thing was based around fucking an embargo.
But really... The thing this movie does really badly is it does all – it's all about telling and not showing.
Yeah.
It's a constant scenes of basically conference calls of people going, wow, that battle sucked.
Yeah.
Boy, this
– No, over and over.
Yeah.
Battle of Naboo.
We put those rebels down. Show us. Ugh. Like it was just constantly updates from the front of stuff we never saw.
Yep.
There was the action didn't pick up until the very end, and it's just incredibly boring.
Oh, it was just the thing was, it's funny, what I found really interesting was that the things that bothered me back in 99 bothered me less so now. Like for example, like Jake Lloyd as Anakin. Like kid was fine.
Sometimes fine, sometimes not. Okay. But he's a kid actor.
He was totally fine. I remember we're like, oh fuck that kid, blah blah. Recognizing that the problems with the kid were what Lucas was giving him to say. Script. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, but like, I actually found, I was like, oh cool, the kid can race and that's fun and blah blah. But like the whole fucking Trade Federation and the Senate and the Chancellor Valorum and is just like. Blink of an eye moment, where all he did was sit down and sigh.
Yeah.
That's using Terrence Stamp's full ability.
I know.
Well, the if you think about the original movies, there's an excitement level from the very beginning in the first one. It starts off with a big battle and it goes and it pretty much doesn't stop. There's quiet moments, but it's always tied into the race to escape the Imperials or to get the plans out. Yeah. Whereas it's just long periods of nothing going on in this movie.
Yeah.
This movie was scripted and edited by people who have no idea how to make a movie. It literally felt like a gigantic high budget student film that nobody knows how to.
Well, it's the problem is you've got a guy in charge who no one can say no to.
Yeah.
But no one can say, I don't know, this is kind of boring. They often say, good job, George, and pat him on the back and keep going. Because that's.
He needed Marcia.
When you've got someone that rich and powerful and influential, there's no one to say no to that person. It's like a Steven Spielberg movie. Yeah. Spielberg's more talented than.
Yeah, but even so, I mean, like, the thing is, Lucas, and this is the weird thing, is Lucas is not without talent. I mean, he was a peer of the greatest filmmakers that we have living right now.
Coppola, Spielberg, Scorsese, De Palma, those are all his IM buddies. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, and they all were equal to one another at a point in the 70s. I mean, I imagine a lot of people haven't actually taken the time to see American Graffiti. It is a wonderful film.
It's one of my favorite movies of all time. It's fantastic.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing is, I kind of tire with the Spielberg, the Lucas bashing. I mean, the movies aren't good, but he's earned every bit of his legendary status. If
absolutely.
Every bit of it. I'm looking at my microphone right now. It's got big THX stamp on it.
Yep.
I mean, he's earned it. He made bad movies, but that doesn't discount his other contributions to not just the original films, but the film community with ILM and with Skywalker Sound and with all the stuff he does.
Yeah,
but it's weird.
He didn't make good movies, and he's old. I think the difference is you've got movies in the 70s made by a kid in his late 20s versus a guy in his early 60s.
Well, part of it also, I think, is also the infrastructure behind him. I mean, if you look at the first Star Wars movie, I mean, immediately, especially like comparing it to comics, and I know we talk a lot about The Walking Dead, lightning in a bottle or whatever, like there are all these little phenomenons that happen over the years in media and in terms of creation. And I think Star Wars, we absolutely know Star Wars was a lightning in a bottle. And it was the byproduct of Lucas as, a young filmmaker struggling to, make the movie that he wanted to. And behind him, a bunch of stoners in LA who just are blowing shit up and are behind schedule. And there was something about that brought an edginess to it. And like the thing that struck me the most about watching this movie now was that the one thing I love about the Star Wars universe and why I pore over those hardcovers of the making of and all that sort of stuff is that I love the Lucas's concept of the used universe and all stuff like that.
It was dirty. It felt so antiseptic.
Yeah, exactly. Like the Millennium Falcon, when it broke down, you believed it broke down because it was the Hydra spanner was broken and like you believed it. This movie, everything is crisp and perfect and smooth and looks great. Even the stuff that's supposed to be dirty, like the cruiser that Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan land in is supposed to be like kind of, just kind of a general cruiser type thing. Even that just looked too perfect. Like ILM has progressed to a point and everyone treated it with such a reverence that they lost that edge with this movie.
But also because you're dealing with models and creature effects versus computer effects, which were not we wouldn't say infancy, but they weren't as good as they are now. And even now, I always prefer real sets, real creatures, and real modeling versus computer generation stuff because you can see the difference.
I'm not that much of a purist in that regard. I think there's stuff that can be done with CG that can help augment a movie do it. But I agree with you. Getting down there and blowing something up in real life and taping it is there's something true to that. And so like I think it's a balance between the two. But
as silly as some of the characters in the cantina looked, at least they were actually there.
Yeah,
and they had texture.
But the fucking Trade Federation guys were actually there.
Yeah, but they look better than CG Jabba though. They look better than a lot of the CG creatures.
That said, the CG Yoda in this update was better than puppet Yoda. I go back and look at that puppet Yoda, and it looked wrong. There's something that
yeah, actually, you know what? I looked, I saw that, and I kind of thought the same thing.
Yes,
although Empire puppet Yoda.
Oh well, that's the pinnacle of perfection.
Oh, that's the
stuff. When you're in the puppet game, you look at Empire 1980, and you're like, that's what I'm striving to be like.
Yeah,
yeah. So
it's the top. I think the thing that really stuck out to me, other than the ponderous editing and plotting, ponderous is not even a word that describes. The next thing I would say is the plethora of paper thin characters.
Oh yeah.
Endless amounts of people who have no reason to be there and no lines really.
Well, you know what's so funny though is that like, and again it goes back to that edge, because part of our love of Star Wars and the original trilogy, at least personally for me, was the Esoterra, which is the Porkins, the Wedge, the Biggs, all the other guys who had like one or two lines that were fantastic and were paper thin, but like got fleshed out in the lore and stuff like that. And in this case, you've got Captain Panaka and Rick Oley and these
Captain
other people.
Panaka is the best example of that in this film, because every line that he says, he's the worst military leader anyone could hope for.
He's nothing's ever going to work. They've got no chance. They're going to lose.
Yep.
And I do not recommend this course.
And the other thing is that and somewhat related is that I was struck by the amount of, and like you were saying, the show versus telling. Like for example, the pod race, when they showed the first lap and then they show the little light, like the first light lap light lights up, and then they cut to C-3PO, and C-3PO is like, "You mean he has to do this three times?"
Yeah,
and I was like, "Really? You had to say that? You didn't have to say that." Like,
I think it's just an older filmmaker, and I think he's specifically making these movies for kids the second time around.
Yeah. I think I do think that there's definitely a, because his whole thing, his thing he's always said forever is, "I love the Republic serials, the old serials," and the thing is, those were probably crappy. So in his mind, I think he thought, "I can make them kind of crappy like that, and people will still love them because I did."
Right. I will say that I saw it in a 1 o'clock matinee, and I walked in, I was like, "Oh, children."
I didn't
even consider this. And
I saw it at 7 at night, and it was all dads and 7 to 10 year old kids.
And I don't know about you guys, but the kids in my theater were cheering, were saying lines. The kids in my theater loved it.
Silent.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah.
They were bored.
Interesting. So
Really bored.
So a couple of things I noticed in terms of looking at the movie now, 13 years later or 12 years later, I probably laughed out loud the most at the in terms of unintentional comedy when they cut to Naboo and the Trade Federation guys talking to Josh's favorite guy, So Bibble. And why was he?
He's also a downer.
Why was he on a throne that walked like a spider?
It seems ineffective.
Yeah, he's on a chair that's like walking along next to him. It's like, what?
Not as silly as the spider walking hologram projector, though.
Yes.
Which is even more silly.
It just made no sense. It didn't help the story at all. And then my other thought was Qui-Gon and Shmi Skywalker. Do you see?
Oh, definitely.
That was a great joke.
Yeah.
He puts his hand on her shoulder at that one point.
Yep. And when they arrived at the pod race, and he's like, "Good morning." And like,
off. Yeah, definitely.
She's terrible.
I don't think
really.
So. I thought she was.
And
really
I think she's terrible. And I think she also had some of the worst lines in the movie. It was just no motivation. Like they kept trying to shoehorn things in with that. It was almost telling and not showing in a way. Like, oh, he didn't have a father. Oh, he's fucking Jesus.
Yeah. And she also buckled like a belt at dinner when she's like, "I want
to." There was no point to that scene
where she's like, "No, I die every time you race those things." And he's like, "Oh, Mom."
Okay.
She's like, "Okay, fine, you can do it." It's like,
awful.
I thought she did a really good job with what she was given, which was everyone was given nothing to work with.
Me.
There are a couple of things though that I actually did enjoy this time around, or I guess every time around, was I think the first 5 or 6 minutes of the pod race is really good. I think it goes on way too long.
Agreed.
But there are thrilling parts of it.
The sound effects.
It's the first thing to happen in the movie.
Yeah.
The sound effects are in that, and Ben Burtt he deserves all the awards and accolades he's gotten. That dunk 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 noise for Sebulba. Like the fact that every pod had its own engine noise was amazing. Yeah. So yeah.
And the final lightsaber battle is still pretty thrilling.
Yeah.
I think it's still lots of fun to watch.
Except that my problem
Well, there are problems with it, but I think on a whole it's still fun to watch.
Oh yeah, no, don't get me wrong. That it was probably like, because honestly, if you go back and look at the original trilogy, the lightsaber battles kind of sucked. I don't really think they
Till Jedi.
Till Jedi, yeah. And maybe the Empire one was a little better, but like this was the first one where they had really good choreography and they really, that sort of thing. But I look at Qui-Gon, I look at Ewan McGregor, I look at Obi-Wan, and I'm reminded of how much I hated in 99 the fucking little ponytail and the braid. and I get that Lucas, took a lot of samurai Asian influence and wanted to bring that over, but I was thinking in my head, I'm thinking to Luke in the black costume in Jedi with how he looked in that, and Han and everybody else, and just every time, and at the end of the movie with the awards thing, and when the little Jake Lloyd had the shitty haircut.
How did he grow that so fast?
Oh, God.
I think one of the biggest problems is a lot of needless addition and complication in the prequels, as opposed to where the first movies are relatively simple.
Yeah.
And now we've got the midichlorians.
The fucking midichlorians.
And now we have the bizarre rule of the Sith where there can only be two. Then how do they ever defeat you?
Yep.
There's only two of them.
There are thousands of you.
Right.
The whole thing with the Padawan system, and then the fact that you've got these apprentices. And there's all these just needless complications.
We don't think you can train him. Yeah. I will train him. We've decided you can train him.
Yeah.
What was that scene?
Oh, it's painful.
There's a lot of scenes that existed for no. It was really boring. Yeah. Really boring.
Really boring. Really.
I don't think I've ever. I mean, I've disliked the movies, but I don't think I've ever noticed how boring they were until I watched it.
Here's the thing. When episode 2 came out, I saw it 3 times in the course of 24 hours. And by about halfway through the second time, I realized I was like, this is the most boring thing I've ever had. And I fell asleep.
Yeah.
Which is really quite bad.
Yeah. It was painful. I mean, it was.
I'll say something nice.
Okay.
I believe that the design, the production design, the things that they made, the way they looked, a lot of that was pretty good. Naboo.
I still like the Senate a lot.
The Naboo fighter a lot. It's my favorite vehicle.
Oh, I like the Naboo fighter. I did like the Naboo cruiser, like the chrome, like that.
Because it looks like the Blackbird.
Yeah, it does.
Let's.
I mean, there are parts that look good. The space battles look good. I mean, they're all the stuff you expect to do well at a technical level
Ewan McGregor did as well as anybody could expect him to. I love Ewan.
He was
Ewan
good throughout the entire trilogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
Liam Neeson is Liam Neeson. I mean, he was a nice presence in the movie that was lacking in the next two films. Natalie Portman's awful. Yeah. But. I think a lot of it has to do with what they were given from a guy who's notoriously doesn't really care what actors do in his movies.
I do like Ewan McGregor. It's just I couldn't take the fucking braid seriously. That was my problem.
I don't understand why that would annoy you at all.
Oh, it's bothered me so much. I have no idea why it bothers me. And the little ponytail. What are these other things that bother us?
Really the antiseptic feeling of these films is really what bothered me the most. Is when they walk around Tatooine and Mos Eisley this time, as opposed to when you think of them in the original movies, you believed it more in the original movies. It looked like a town, where it just looked like a set.
Yeah. That said, I think we should probably touch upon the reason why these are out in the 3D, and I thought the 3D was completely innocuous.
There's no reason for it.
Well, not that there's no reason. I mean, the reason is that it's the trend and that they're driving.
No, I mean,
I like that. Yeah, well, there was no moment where I was like, oh wow, look at that 3D. But that said, when the crawl was kind of on top of the stars, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And I was pleased to see that Lucas or whoever worked on it at Lucasfilm chose to take allow the 3D to give it depth versus come at you approach.
It's like they didn't. That's all they could do, really. Because it was never shot. On the other hand, it was a lot of really bad 3D. 3D, I thought. There was some scenes where you just looked like flat people on different planes.
The pod race, when they were introducing the pod racers, I noticed it there.
It was because it wasn't shot for it. One of the problems with retrofitting these movies is if they're not made for it. Their plan is to release all 6 movies this way, and it'll be interesting. I mean, it's apparently doing really well this weekend at the box office.
Well, not surprised, because it's the brand. But I totally forgot how much I fucking couldn't stand. I mean, I know it's cliche and whatever, but Jar Jar and the Gungans and Mos Nass, I was just like, oh, this is Captain Tarples. This is painful.
I've forgotten how bad until the first thing he shows up, he starts talking. I went, oh, fuck me.
Yeah, and I was like, this really is as bad as we joked about it.
That whole talk that they have with Mos Nass is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then they're like, now we have to go through the planet core. And that was perhaps the most laughable thing in the whole thing.
unnecessary. Completely unnecessary. Yeah. There's no reason they have to go to the planet Kor.
It was just an excuse to have Big Fish and have another, you know, I mean, like another, but you know.
It was so anticlimactic and silly. Yeah. I mean, like the characters never acted like they were in danger.
No, never.
They never moved. Yeah. They never emoted. Yeah. They never did anything. Yeah. So what are we supposed to feel as people who are watching it? So they escape from two fish and then they do it again.
Right.
And
you know,
they're there.
You know what was awesome that I'd forgotten about?
What?
The Jedi strut.
Jedi strut's good.
Jedi strut is good. Yep.
Yeah. I was like, yes, Jedi strut. Yeah. It was, but there were things that didn't make sense. Like in the beginning, they show them escaping from the fucking droids that you could sneeze on; they'll fall over.
Yeah,
boy, that's not a villain we need to worry
about.
Although
the destroyer droids are awesome.
Yeah, but then you see the Jedi's have super speed and they can jump, and so then when at the end when Obi-Wan's running to save Qui-Gon from Darth Maul, he doesn't run fast enough to make it through the bizarre Zelda-esque control. Like, why are all these power rooms full of
it's a video game.
Yeah, it's totally video game rules. Totally video game.
But he couldn't run fast enough to make it in the little hallway when before in the beginning he zipped. They ran at super speed down.
They were inconsistently Jedi-ish.
Yeah.
They needlessly fucked with the whole Jedi mythos in these movies.
I'm totally resurfacing nerd banter from 1999, but why didn't Qui-Gon disappear?
Because not all Jedi had that power.
Oh, God.
They had to really meditate on it. It was Yoda was one of the few, and
Obi-Wan.
Because they were, you know, on their own for a long time. It was.
Yeah. I remember discussing this, but I've other things to think about now.
You know, one of my favorite funny things in the movie is Qui-Gon never says goodbye when he's on a communicator.
Never. I noticed that. Yeah.
Click. Because you go back, Master.
And by the way,
Master.
I swear, and that's the one thing, the communicator, I will give the communicator credit as well as Darth Maul's probe droids, that I do like when they build shit out of stuff that exists in real life, because Darth Maul's little probe droids, those round little lenses are totally webcams from 1999, like Logitech webcams painted black, and then Qui-Gon's communicator was totally the woman's razor that came out around that time. Do you remember that? The green one?
Yeah. Yeah. Razor.
Totally. Yep. So,
also still good. I think the Duel of the Fates is still a really good piece of music.
It's stuck in my head. I can't get it out.
The music's not bad for it, although there's too much of it. Although, thank God, because otherwise the silence would be deafening. Like, it was every moment of it was scored.
Yeah.
And I realized that John Williams, you know, he's no schlub. He saw this movie and he's like, this is terrible. Yeah. And so he did what he could.
Yeah.
I think. But in the end, it ended up with so much music. That like it never stops, which
it
I don't
really,
even know.
Oh, like an hour and a half into it, I was like, I'm bored. Yep. I am bored at a Star Wars movie. And also the other thing I thought was in the beginning when the Star Wars logo pops up on the screen, I felt nothing.
Oh, I still got a little chill.
I didn't feel that you know excitement level or any for anything.
Oh, I still got that little chill. It wasn't as dramatic as previously, but yeah.
The subsequent prequels pretty much ran that out of me. Well, I was saying before we recorded, and I didn't realize you didn't know this. At the time that I saw this movie, I did not know who Peter Serafinowicz was, but now he's the voice of Darth Maul, which I've known for a long time. I haven't seen it since then.
I didn't know that period, and I'm blown away by that fact.
Totally obvious.
Yeah.
Other people who showed up, I was sitting there. I was probably checking my phone, and I heard McNulty from The Wire, and I looked up, and I was like, "Oh, it's Dominic West, and not a role."
Well, yeah. Then also, you can see Amidala's the fake Amidala was a young Keira Knightley with a much fuller face, by the way, too.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, and one of the handmaidens was Sofia Coppola, but that's a more of a cameo type thing, you know. Mm. But
I don't know.
She was better in this than The Godfather 3.
Oh God!
Yeah, jeez.
I think a lot of this is sort of get into the overview of it, but I think for me, this going to see this time of talking about it, sort of closing the door on the movies. I gave away the movies today to Goodwill, like my DVDs for the original of the prequels.
Catharsis.
Like I'm done. I'm done complaining about it. I'm done bitching about the prequels. I don't need them in my life. I've got the original movies on DVD. I've got them on Blu-ray. I don't have the prequels anymore. I don't need to worry about it.
Yeah.
I was looking at it. It was sort of a very expensive EU film that someone made. It doesn't have to bother my continuity of the first trilogy. It doesn't have to affect my enjoyment of it. I don't have to worry about what they set up in the continuity, what doesn't fit in the it's out. I don't need to worry about it. I've cut it out. And when we finish this show, I'll be done worrying about the prequels. I don't have to.
So was this the kind of thing where it's like, Thursday, June 17th, 2007, and you just woke up and like, fucking prequels. Like, has this been weighing on your mind?
Well, because you said earlier in the show that up until 1999, you loved Star Wars like a religion. So it affected you in some way.
I think that was more just for the comedic effect and the punchline. Right. I still believe in Star Wars. I still believe. To people who don't know us personally as well as we do, Star Wars is in our lexicon to the point where and that's one of the things I find is most fascinating is that in the three of us, we talk a lot through the week because we work together, we're good friends, all that sort of stuff, and we'll use things. So if somebody's in like a bad mood or whatever, I'll just say I care, and you know exactly what I mean and what the reference is, and we don't need, and you just move on. And it's like, I think Star Wars is still special in that,
and it's still funny.
Yeah.
It's still funny. See you in hell.
I'll see you in hell. Exactly.
If the good thing come out of this movie was I was sitting there during the credits and I was like, I want to go home and watch A New Hope because I need to cleanse. But like,
the thing is, the prequels never sullied for me the total Star Wars thing in general. I still have Star Wars checks. When I do have to write a check, it's my Star Wars checks. You know what I mean? I still have I have art up in my apartment. I still buy the books or whatever. You know, I bought the Blu-rays. You know, and the prequels never, you know, destroyed it for me, but it sullied it a little. But
it's funny because there are a lot of people out there, and I tend to think of Simon Pegg as like the poster boy about this. He did a show about how much he hated it, really.
Yep.
I mean, that's a lot of what Spaced was. Like, I never cared that much about these. Like, I was like, they're not good.
What do you love?
Well, no. I mean, like, I loved – like, I never did anything for the way that I felt about the originals or the sort of connection that I had to those.
I think the important lesson is that you can still embrace and love that thing that made you fall in love with it, and you don't have to – but I think it's hard for a lot of, you know, kind of geeky kind of vices and things like that. You don't have to fall prey to love every aspect of it and everything that comes of it. I haven't read – there was a time where I would
– Every book?
I read every book. I read Shadows of the Empire. I played the video. I played Dark Forces. I read Tales of the Bounty Hunters. Tales of, you know, one. Like all that stuff.
The X-Wing trilogy. Yeah, the Rogue Squadron trilogy.
Yeah, the New Jedi Academy. I read all that stuff. And then when I got to the book, when the next book in the series that they were releasing was the one where Chewbacca died, I was like, you know, I don't want to be in a world where Chewbacca's dead. I'm not going to read that. And I never read it from then on.
Yeah.
You know, and so like the thing is that like you find your stake in the ground. This is when it started, not when it ended, but this is when I'm choosing to close the door on it. And you celebrate that, and you don't need to everything else that I've never watched Clone Wars. I hear it's a fantastic cartoon. I haven't watched a single one, not because I think, you know, the prequels are bad or whatever. I just don't want to. I don't need to. It's cool. You know, like I'm good. I'm happy with what I got.
I agree.
So
I think there's a lesson for that. And there's a comic fan lesson in that, which we'll let them figure out for themselves. But
exactly.
Wise move.
Yeah,
but they don't like it when you tell them what to think.
I think this was good. Actually, I was pretty happy coming out of the theater because I feel like now I've had closure with the whole thing. I don't need to worry about it. I literally got rid of those movies today at Goodwill.
That's amazing. Like,
I'm impressed.
I bought the Blu-ray, the complete all six movies Blu-ray just because I wanted them. Whatever. I don't feel a need to purge like you are, but I find that really interesting.
If I ever have a kid, they'll not watch the prequels. They'll watch the originals. They won't worry. I mean,
let me put it this way: Star Wars still exists, and kids are going to like it, and they're going to like these.
Yeah,
I don't actually see that as a bad thing.
I don't either. Yeah.
I kind of like that there's a thing that's going to be for their gender. Like I said, it was all kids in the theater.
Well, I think if you look at it from a storytelling standpoint, it's a horrible story and it ruins. I mean, if you watch them linearly from 1 to 6, it ruins the flow of the story.
But the thing is,
who would let their kids do that?
It does ruin the flow of the story. But also, if you look at 4 through 6, 4 through 6 are riddled with plot holes and riddled with you know like you're going to tell me Lucas always intended for Leia and Luke to be brother and sister?
No, not at all.
Fucking
the whole mythology behind it is all, of course, Hollywood, you know, bullshit. But I mean, it's fine. But
there's still that magic. There's still that je ne sais quoi that makes it that made it like a religion for me. So
I wanted to get all the Blu-rays so I could get the documentaries and the big set.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, that's why. And I like that.
But I don't think
the packaging was really nice.
Well, that's silly.
But I like that. I'm sorry. Sue me. I got the Goonies, the 25th anniversary, the one that came with the board game.
It's a bit much.
Well, what are you gonna do?
It's a bit much.
I got the nice Goodfellas one.
Is a nice Goodfellas one?
Yeah, the 25th anniversary one.
I don't
the red Blu-ray comes with some other random movie. No. I mean, like it's a mob movie, like an inspirational movie, like a movie that inspired or whatever. Yeah, it's very strange. The Back to the Future set, the 25th anniversary Back to the
Future. I got
that. Yeah, I got that. Yeah. So, anyway.
So was the experience of seeing the movie as bad as you thought it would be?
It was as bad as I knew it was.
Oh no, I gave it more credit. About 20 minutes in, I'm like, oh, this was bad.
You got it. I saw it 10 times. By the 10th time, I knew everything that was bad about it. So I thought it was funny at the time. This time, I was just like, I have other things to do.
So here's the question, Connor. Mm-hmm. Now that you've purged and you've closed the book, are we not going to do this for episode 2 and episode 3 when they come out in 3D? Or
no, there's no reason to do it.
Oh,
no.
All right, I was committed to do the whole.
We're purging the demons here. Right,
episode 2 is even worse.
Episode 2 is the worst of the three. The rolling around in the grass. George Lucas writing romance, not very good.
I love.
Oh man, so bad.
I think it's important to let stuff like this go for your mental health. I think that's a lesson in comics and in sci-fi and anything. Not everything that comes out has to affect your enjoyment of the thing you liked.
And it doesn't have to take away from any of what things that you've enjoyed when they previously came out. This didn't change the first three movies at all.
I still love them. If I could only own three movies, I'd only own these three movies. I love everything about them. But this, I mean, I don't need to. These don't need to. Why should I let it ruin something I love?
Yep.
You know?
Totally.
Just let it go. Forget about it.
You should watch that documentary on the episode 1 disc before you got rid of it.
I should have, because that was a really good documentary.
Yeah, he's got the two markers.
Yeah.
He's got the red marker and the blue marker.
Oh, no, the stamps.
Are they stamps?
Yeah, they're stamps. Remember, he walked around with two stamps that was approved and rejected or whatever it was.
That's even worse.
Yeah. Rick McCollum, he's the really evil person.
Rick McCallum, he started growing his own neck.
Yeah, he did.
It was the Sith thing is hilarious with that.
Yeah. Oh,
God. That neck, there you man. Go.
All right. So we could talk about Star Wars for hours, but we've
purged. I feel better than how you guys feel.
I feel better. Yeah.
I think it was worth it to go feel better about things and let it go. And
it was worth a laugh.
Let go of the past.
Yeah.
Josh, you have a son. Will you show him the new movies?
If he wants to see him, I don't care. Yeah, that's fine by me.
Watto?
I think he's a Greek. I think. I'm not sure.
There's all those scary racial parallels happening in there.
Oh, God.
And I was like, well, the Gungans aren't necessarily supposed to be black. And then they show them dancing at the end. I was like, yep, they are. Oh, this is uncomfortable. This is uncomfortable.
What were they giving him at the end? The giant
No, it was one of those electricity balls they sell at Spencer's.
No. Oh, yeah, well, yeah. It's a peace globe. And he yells peace, but you can't tell it.
Oh God!
Peace. Represent. All the charm of the first three movies are not.
Let's hold a ceremony and congratulate R2-D2 on being a robot and fixing some shit.
R2-D2 is the best. He's the Lynch. He's
nothing
the key for all.
Nothing of value to sell for parts except for this astromech droid.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
Is probably worth a lot of money.
I know.
We let it trail behind us about 50 feet through this town full of thieves and thugs.
Because he's like, my droid has all the specs, and then they climb up the stairs, and R2 gets to the stairs, and they cut away. It's like, well, how does he get up the stairs? Oh, God, I love these movies. I mean, I don't, but I do. You know, I love the universe. I love R2.
Lucas's kids sucked.
Yeah. Jeez.
That's mean.
They did. So not as much as the other kid with the mustache.
What happened to Kistler? Yes. The mustache.
How did that 8-year-old get a mustache?
And what's with the kid, the child Greedo? That was awful.
Baby Greedo. Yeah.
He was fatter than the adult one.
Yeah, totally.
Well, he thinned out when he grew up and, you know, maintained.
Hey, guys, you know what would be great in this scene? Greg Proops.
Oh, that, I mean, as good as fun as the race is, though, that commentator was awful.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, man.
Well, let's stop this now.
Yeah, please stop it now. All right, so go to ifanboy.com where you can normally, you can look into, I can't even do
we
it.
We have no website. I believe this is a movie we cannot see.
Why are you in charge again?
I don't know.
He's the governor.
I'm really bad at it.
We should probably leave. I don't agree. We should leave. You were wrong about everything.
Seriously, any movie I go to see, I don't want to hear the word bureaucrat.
Yeah.
As many times as I heard. Anyway, so go to ifanboy.com.
Communications disruption can mean only one thing, invasion. Or your communication array went down.
Yeah,
or you had some sort of power disruption.
Or Connor's there.
Yeah, or there's a storm.
Connor's nearby.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
Every time I have, if I see a light flicker, oh, yep. Clearly there's an invasion happening.
Invasion. It can only mean one thing. Invasion.
Japan couldn't take it anymore.
We don't have the security force to do this, to protect it.
Aren't you in charge of the security force? Shouldn't you have mentioned that?
I don't know. When you guys attacked, it looked like you had a bunch of dudes. They got the cars with guns. It's like,
we wouldn't know because that all happened off screen.
Right. So go to iFanboy.com where you can get you can check out all the posts and articles and podcasts and fun stuff. That's all at iFanboy.com, all about comics. And next week, Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance.
Is that next week?
It's February 17th. It comes out.
Oh.
I'm going.
I'm going to go.
Awesome. That was... So we'll be back.
Say I'm going to boycott.
We'll be back to talk about Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance, the first comic book movie of the year.
Wow, that's next week, huh?
I can't wait.
Shit.
Wait, all I got to say is here's the log line on IMDb for Ghost Rider. As Johnny Blaze hides out in Eastern Europe, he's called upon to stop the devil who's trying to take human form. Why is he in Eastern Europe?
Why? Idris Elba's in it, Josh.
Idris Elba is in it.
Yep. So this is going to be a good movie. This is going to be a good year for movies, actually, between Amazing Spider-Man, Avengers, and
oh, it's going to be insane. Yeah, it's going to be great.
Dark Knight.
And The Hobbit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll be back. We'll be back a lot this year.
Yep. So, all right. So until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
Oh, God, I don't ever want to think about this movie again. It was so bad.
It means one
thing. I'm Josh.
Invasion.
Phone's out. Oh, shit.